Hey everyone, it's Tim here, and before we begin today's episode, I just want to acknowledge the COVID-19 situation, which is rapidly changing and affecting all of us around the world right now. In fact, the situation has changed so fast that many of us are now facing lockdowns in our countries and have been forced to move all our teaching online in a very short space of time. While the changes may seem daunting, teachers around the world have embraced this new reality, and while finding the transition exhausting at times, we're hearing many reports of teachers who are enjoying the experience. On the blog, we've got our expert roundup of online teaching resources, and our YouTube and Facebook streams will be of particular interest to those of you teaching with Zoom and exploring multi-camera setups and software like Manycam. And over at topmusicpro.com, we've released a brand new online teaching workshop for our members, and I'm recording as many tutorial and problem-solving videos there as I possibly can. If you've got any questions, please reach out to us on social or email support@topmusic.co. Rest assured, the Top Music community is here to help support and guide all of you through this challenging period. Keep up the great work, stay positive, and I hope you enjoy today's episode. Hello everyone, and welcome back to the Topcast, your weekly home for music teaching, inspiration, lesson ideas, and support. You're listening to episode number 185, and a very special welcome to all our Top Music Pro teachers out there. My name is Tim Topham, your host for the show, and if this is your first time here, thank you very much for tuning in. This month's focus on the blog, podcast, and YouTube at Top Music is online teaching, and we're going to be providing as much guidance, support, and ideas as possible to guide your teaching during some of these challenging times. As I mentioned right at the start of the episode, we've already released a heap of how-to tech videos to help get your online teaching established, and we'll be continuing these releases both on the blog, on Facebook, YouTube, and here on the podcast as the month unfolds. Today's show notes and a full transcript are now available at topmusic.co/episode185. So, how are you guys going with your online teaching? When you listen to this, most of us will be about a month into our online teaching, although I know in the United States some of you have been on holiday and maybe just coming back to online teaching after having some time to prepare for it. It's been fascinating seeing the questions come through in various Facebook groups and in our own member forums, and also hearing the great stories of lots of fun times, crazy things kids are doing, the way that they're embracing it, the way many parents are supporting it. We also are hearing stories of some students pulling out of lessons or parents unsure of continuation, but that is very much in the minority, so I hope that hasn't affected you. Most parents seem very desperate for any activities that their children can continue given everything has been cancelled. So we're in a great position in many ways. Unlike sport and dance and drama and all of those activities, which most of them have just had to be cancelled while kids may be able to practice their dance at home, there's not much going on really. We are able to continue, and we're in a lucky position in that regard. We're able to continue teaching, and we can do it remotely. And while there are some tech issues, and I know audio is a problem for some teachers, internet connections can be unstable, and that can cause issues with technology. On the whole, things are going well. And the other great advantage we have is that we do have a lot of different platforms that we can use for connecting to our students online. So if one doesn't work, you can always try a different one. And you can even try combinations of them. So for teachers who are really struggling with audio quality for a student, even if it's just on one day, normally it's fine, but one day goes bad, then connect with that student on your phone and have the sound of the piano or instrument come through the phone while you watch them on a video connection on Zoom. So you could try that. Or if Zoom's not working, then try FaceTime. And if that doesn't work, try Skype. I think in these times, one of the most important things that we need to remember to keep in mind is flexibility, absolute flexibility. And be aware that it's totally okay. Some lessons aren't going to go so well, and don't be too hard on yourself. We all strive for incredibly high professional standards in our teaching, but when things change as rapidly as they are at the moment, we need to go easy on ourselves, give ourselves a pat on the back, take time to reflect, and be proud of all that we've been able to achieve in such a short amount of time. So in today's episode, we're going to be talking to a teacher who's been online for many years and, in fact, only teaches online. And unlike many teachers listening who have been thrown very suddenly into online teaching in the last month due to the pandemic, today's guest has run his studio this way for years, teaching students around the world, which gives us a great background into how a teacher can get set up like this. If you would like to continue online teaching, at least as part of your studio mix in the future and after the current crisis subsides, then getting ideas from a guest like today's can be really valuable. So today we'll unpack how he goes about his teaching, what his tech setup looks like, and also his advice for teachers who are just getting started, because the technology is, while it can be a bit scary and daunting and cause problems, it shouldn't be the thing that stops you or creates problems right at the start, because you can get started quite simply. We'll talk about some of the pros and cons of online teaching and get his experience and tips from someone who's been teaching this way for many, many years. So my guest is a professional pianist, online piano teaching specialist, and music technology trainer. His vast musical training and experience ranges from classical, jazz, to pop music. His unique approach to teaching is a hybrid blend of old and new methods with an emphasis on creativity and strategic practice. His composition and jazz students have placed first in the state of Texas numerous times. He's also been featured in various international piano magazines and books, conferences, and podcasts. His online teaching studio, called Virtual Piano Studio, is a growing community of students of all ages and skill levels who take private instruction via live online lessons. He teaches students in the US, China, and Australia. Welcome to the show, Stephen Hughes.
Hey, thanks, Tim. It's great to be on here under unusual circumstances with the times we live in today, but I think this is going to be a very good segment for everybody.
Yeah, look, it's obviously the right timing, and I appreciate that you've just rushed back from having to get your MacBook repaired, I think it was, before all the malls and shops closed down and things. So we're just going to take a breath and enjoy this conversation, which is obviously well-timed, and we planned it that way given what's happening in the world right now. So I'm just quite interested. You've actually been teaching online for about 15 years. So you haven't been forced into this. This was a choice that you made. So why did you get started way back when?
Actually, it's been 10 years. I think the 15 years was maybe from my bio for teaching. No, I started experimenting with online lessons about 10 years ago, inspired by the great Dr. Mario O'Hara, professor of piano at Stephen F. Austin. Anyways, before all of that, I was into MIDI technology, recording, computer synthesizer, you know, played in bands, had all the crazy synths and computers and recording, just love experimenting with that, anything music technology-wise. So really the seed for this kind of stuff was planted then. There was really a moment when my family decided we wanted to better our lives. So we wanted to get out of the suburbs, explore, be adventurous, you know. When we went to this direction, it just completely flipped the switch, thinking, how am I going to support the family without restrictions, having to rebuild the studio? So I just kind of went for it, dug deep, and you know, kind of explored what all the options were. And that's what really got me into online lessons full time a few years ago. Mm. You know, I've been teaching online various students over time, and most of them, they moved. So that's kind of the uniqueness there is that they were current students, they moved. So I got some really unique experience with that and kind of finding out what worked, what didn't work. Even students moving to like Singapore, the husband getting a job over there. So It's interesting how it's developed and then how it all came together. So,
yeah, it's quite a common way for teachers to start, which is when students move away, either when students move away or there is bad weather or students are sick. I think they're the kind of the top three that will make teachers go, maybe I should think about this as an option. Now, of course, with coronavirus, we're being kind of forced to reconsider this if we want to continue our living. So it's a bit of a different situation. But it's interesting that that is how you got started as well. So tell us about your studio now. Approximately how many students and their ages, abilities, and are you all online now or do you still teach a bit of in person?
Yes, everything is online, and it's pretty much because of my location.
Okay, are you out in the country?
I'm 5 minutes from the highway, but I'm right in the thick of the forest. Let's just put it that way.
Right. Pretty okay. Awesome. Got it.
You know, the last year and a half, I've been teaching all of my students online. Currently teach a range of students from ages 8 to older adult. Programs range from classical, jazz, pop, rock, college prep even, and teaching MIDI technology, teaching how to use synths. Mm-hmm. Have students in China, Australia, and then the US. But the majority of my current students are students I taught before I moved.
Right. So. Cool. And do you do this? Two approaches to online teaching, as far as I can tell. There's the recorded lesson approach, which isn't live at the same time, and there's the live online lesson approach. Can you tell us the differences between these, and which one do you use, or do you use both methods?
Yeah, so the live online approach is just as if you were in the studio with the student, right? Virtually, but in the studio, real time. And then pre-recorded, it's also known as, Mario O'Hara coined it as asynchronized. Mm-hmm. And a friend of mine, Tony Parlapiano, is called it time-shifted lessons.
Tony's on my list, actually. I want to interview him coming up too.
That's going to be a great interview. I would break it down into two categories. One is the video exchange. Mm-hmm. You can have a formal lesson format or just your regular lesson format and exchanging videos back and forth between teacher and student, having a hosting or cloud to be able to do that and then sending notes back and forth. Or it can be customized videos. I do that quite a bit where people pay you to actually come put together a custom video just for a piece of music. So there's different ways to do that. There's also the a la carte lessons on demand.
Yep.
These are scheduled as needed based off the student's schedule. Really busy professionals like that option, attorneys, doctors, that sort of thing.
Yeah, nice. So there's going to be teachers out there who are listening right now and right in the midst of starting to do some online lessons. Maybe they've just tipped their toes in the water. Maybe they've gone all in. Maybe they're just thinking about, oh my goodness, I'm going to have to do this quite soon. So for teachers who are in this situation, what is your sort of initial advice about getting the ball rolling?
I would say start simple, think simple. Do not get caught up in what everybody else is doing. Manage your expectations, focus on teaching as much as possible. The more you get into the tech part, the more it's going to be frustrating if you're not sure how it all works. There's tons of resources out there to help you with that. But I would say, also be patient, seek out advice as well. So it's one of those things where don't rush to do something you're not ready to do. Mm-hmm. In fact, I know a lot of teachers are back from spring break, but I might even take another week to sort things out. Mm. Just take your time. You got to also communicate with this with the parents, and your business is at stake. This is really important. And so you need to take your time to do the research so you're not rushing, making mistakes. It's really our livelihood at stake. So super important to do that. Mm. Some teachers are going to have higher expectations. We all are, because we want to maintain the same types of things that we do in our studios, especially with sound. But, keep it simple until you transition. Think about the possible next steps a little bit later. If you really want to improve your setup, I would just take it one piece at a time, even consult with some trained professional if you need to, one-on-one, consult with the groups, just, take your time. One step at a time.
Yeah, I think that is spot on advice. And I've been explaining to teachers that really you can get started with all you need is a device of some sort, a pile of books or a chair to put something on next to the piano, and some kind of software that you can communicate to your other to your student with. I mean, that is really all you need. It's not going to be amazing, but it's going to be enough to get started. And then, as you say, you can potentially get a webcam, and then you can get a mic and things like that. I'm really keen to find out about your tech setup, but we'll do that right at the end for those people who want to go a little bit more hardcore, because the things I've seen you do on videos is very, very cool. So let's just talk quick hardware, just devices to get started. And what's your favorite software or app to make the connection? What do you use or recommend for beginners, that is, for new teachers starting this out?
I personally love Zoom. We're using Zoom right now.
We're using Zoom, yes.
I just, I've been using it for a while. I've compared it with the other apps, Skype, Google Hangouts, even GoToMeet, Meetup. And, there's going to be some apps, and this is really key, is whatever works for you is going to work the best. So you can take this general advice, but it's not going to apply to all teachers. some situations FaceTime will work best. Hey, if you're connected with the friends or family, and if it's easy, you're already there, you may not want to even mess with Zoom. But just overall, you know, what I love about it, you know, first off, it's free. I mean, all of them are free, but it's one of those things where because of all the features and it's free, that's what makes it so great. You know, the students, they don't need to register. You just get a link. They don't need an account. You just go, you're like, boom, right in there. It's just up to the teacher to set up the account. You know, it automatically records lessons. That is huge. So many benefits there. I've seen really strong connectivity compared to other apps and customizing the audio settings. So many things that you can do there just to immediately have better results. A lot of the default settings are not to really optimize for what we are doing. They're optimized for voice. And gosh, you know, group lessons. You know, the big question out there for the studios and thus, you know, so they do group lessons or summer camps and all of that. There are options for doing that through Zoom. So, you know, it's packed with features, device add-ons, adding your tablet, very easy to do, screen sharing that, annotations, file sharing, just a lot of stuff there that you can mess around with.
Yeah, I agree. And I want to reiterate that it is actually free. If you're using it one-on-one, there's only two people in a room like we're doing today, it is free for an hour-long lesson, for a two-hour-long lesson, whatever it is. So you don't need to go and pay a lot of money for Zoom. And I agree with Steve, it is by far the best connectivity, most stable connection, even at low connection speeds. If your student's struggling, you will have the best connection, in my opinion, with Zoom. So I'm glad to hear that. And you can start on tablets if you don't have a laptop or a desktop too.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's great advice. So what about things like books and music scores? Because this can be a challenge, particularly, I mean, for you, you've been doing this for a long time. So you're able to set up and use books that you know will work across the distance. But for our teachers, a lot of them will be wanting to continue what they're already doing in lessons. So what are some of the tricks or things they need to remember about using books at a distance?
Okay, so what you need to imagine is we need to make this into, there's a few thoughts here. One is you can make the music virtual. You can actually share the music on screen and you can teach in that way. Another thought is you need to change how you communicate, be more detailed, be more specific about where you are in the music. So, you know, if you're taking that approach and you don't want to do the kind of the tech stuff, screen sharing, which I can get into later.
Now, you mentioned just before, Steve, about Zoom settings. You said that Zoom by default isn't set up for audio. Have you got any quick tips about how to make that better for music? Is that something you can explain easily?
Yes. So what Zoom does, there's a term called suppressing the audio, and that's basically taking out background noise. And so by default, because it wasn't designed for this application, the setting, playing music back and forth. So you simply go into the website form of the app. I have tutorials for this. I have tons of Zoom stuff that I've been working on lately. But you simply go into the advanced features and then you check the box or uncheck the box. And now, voila, now it's giving you the real audio sound instead of suppressing or kind of squeezing out the background noise, and a lot better audio. And it's been working really well, especially for like wind instruments who are getting some really wild and crazy.
Yeah, it can sound really freaky after a while. Yeah. No, I've experienced that on webinars as well. Unfortunately, the webinar software often doesn't have that ability to change the setting. So there you go. Another uptick for Zoom being able to change that and turn off that the compression. Yeah, nice. And we'll link to some of your resources and your website in our show notes, which is at topmusic.co/episode185. And we'll also get you a chance to explain what you've got for teachers online at the end as well. So I want to change tack and just go to the pedagogy side of things now, because this is where I think once you've got a tech set up and you're connected, that's almost the easy thing, really, if you're just getting started and not worrying about overhead cameras and things. But actually the teaching, this is where it becomes a bit different. So can I ask you a few questions on the differences in pedagogy now?
Sure.
All right. So
do it.
Now, I'm not sure how many littlies you teach, like young Wrigley kids who really would struggle to focus potentially in an online lesson. Have you got any quick tips on that for teachers who are going to be doing that?
So this is a kind of two-sided answer, a two-sided thought, because we're dealing in the now, but then we're also dealing in the future or in the past. So the now is different because we need to teach. So let me deal with the not now, if I guess we could say. I don't recommend teaching that young unless they have strong parental support and they're there to guide on every step of the way, even helping with modeling technique, being there, the kind of the physical guide, and you're almost training the parent. Actually, you're training the parent in that, in the lessons to guide them. I think those are more special cases, to be honest with you. Now, as this evolves and we become better online teachers, and I think that maybe it will open the doors there for sure. And then we get into this whole new way of teaching. So we're stretching our thinking here. And now we're going to be really awesome online teachers that can teach using modified pedagogy. So I think that's really cool to think about. Anyways, some of the other things here, online learning actually forces you to focus. Like, you don't have this environment around you to be distracted. It's kind of this singular focus of, it's almost like there's this thing in the brain that makes you just snap into focus. I don't know what it is, but I'm sure there's something psychological there you can go beyond with that. But I've found that I don't have a problem with my younger students at all. Now, there's varying degrees of what, in terms of behavioral things that are happening. You know, the rote style approach of teaching actually works really well too, and call response. So I would say for the, and of course, games, off the bench activities, those kind of things you can easily do in an online setting. So,
Okay, that would surprise some teachers listening, I think, who would think, if they go off camera or if they move off the bench, I'm not going to be able to see them, or how do I control what they're going to do?
Portability. In terms of, having your cameras be portable, having multiple cams, being able to set stations, like I call it the teacher station. But within that teacher station, you can have a second station. You don't have to move stuff around, or you could have just a, camera on wheels, whatever you want to think about it. You know, right. You can move around and be there in a virtual setting. I mean, I could think of all kinds of ways to be able to do that. Again, once, you're going to need help. But think of it as like following an exercise program on TV or YouTube.
Yeah, exactly.
They're very doable.
Yeah. It's interesting you mentioned about the focus required, because I've seen a lot of teachers starting to talk now that they're starting to teach online about how tired and exhausting it is when you're not used to it. So does that get easier?
It does, but you need to schedule breaks.
Right.
This is a different element here. I'm used to it, but look, I scheduled breaks a long time ago on my schedule in studio.
Yeah.
I can't do that, but that's just me. But I think that made it so much easier for me to transition to online lessons full time. And the energy part of it, I could see how it could be a drag. And that's what's happening right now, especially this first full week. So schedule breaks and do it now while things are new. You're going to tap out. So very important to go ahead with these kind of new procedures and all the newness of this, you can do it. The parents, the students want you to have the energy that you need to teach. And I've seen some amazing teachers make some comments that they don't have the energy. And it's pretty sad to hear that. So, please schedule breaks.
Yeah. And maybe if you used to be able to teach 3 hours back to back in studio, just remember that that's going to be very different when you're online and trying to focus on getting your technology right and your thinking changing. So Yeah, go easy on yourself, guys, if you are changing. How do you, like, I quite like walking around during a lesson or being able to look over and down on the top of the keys of the student. Now, most students won't have a setup which will allow that. How do you see what your students are playing? Do you get them to move their camera around, or how does that work?
You know, if you have the right angle, which I always suggest, I mean, it depends on screen size. Screen size is a big thing. If they get a big screen, then they can put the camera even further away from the piano. Let's backtrack though. The profile shot somewhat overhead, angled down, gives you a really, really good angle. And look, we're professionals. We can see good technique and we went from certain angles. If you can see vertical and horizontal movement, which is what that's going to provide, you have enough there and also be able to see the motion. So, you know, you see the torso, you see the movement of the arm, forearm movement, wrist, you can see the flow. And as teachers, we can see the flow, the whole upper body movement. We know what to do. So it's just about the proper camera angle. Now, the students, you want to guide the students to do that. You want to help them set it up that way. And you have to be helpful in this process. You can't just expect them to put it together themselves. And you know, so the first few weeks, you kind of ease into that. You don't have to pressure them to like go get all this gear. You just tell them, look, you know, this is gonna be fun. You take a really excited approach to it. Hey, let's try this angle here. Let's move it over here. They love that stuff. You know, they get into it. They love being helpful and being part of the process.
What about when you can't touch the student? I know this is asked a lot. The questions, you know, how do you get their hand shape right or whatever if you can't move their hand and things like that?
Okay, so, you know, this is one of the hardest ones, and it takes time to learn how to recommunicate those thoughts or changing your thought process and using different terminology, modeling. That's why it's important. Camera angle is very, very important. Using certain things like bird mouth, open, using things like dropping with strong finger through the key. You know, there are certain phrases that they just get it. That's why, you know, our Piano Safari approach is great, because the description of the technique fits perfectly for this kind of thing, dropping heavy through the key. So using something like, you know, a lion paw and describing the lion paw, using words to convey to them that, you know, descriptive words, like I said, with dropping heavy through the key and tagging those with certain techniques. So when you find those phrases and then you model it, and then they go back and watch the recording, you know, that you can really teach technique. Now, you will need to make adjustments, and, you know, the younger they are, they're going to need more help with that. But fortunately, we have tons of resources, tons of videos, and we're going to get more and more of those to help with this process. But yeah, really communicating your thoughts with precision and, you know, in term, you know, with the right phrases so they understand what to do.
And metaphors, I think you're saying. You know,
yes, metaphors.
Which
yes.
is why Piano Safari is a great method. I do love that as well. And I think the other question that always comes up too is about scores as well, and music and being able to point. Like, and I learned this. I remember the first time I ever did a lesson. This was years ago online, and I'm like, "Yeah, I'm trying to get them. I'm trying to point at his score. I couldn't do it." What are your tips on that score sharing thing?
Well, we kind of touched on it earlier with being descriptive and communicating that more efficiently to the students. But I would suggest doing screen sharing.
So you as a teacher are going to share your screen, and on that screen will be the score, and you can use your mouse to point at it. Is that what you're talking about?
Well, there's a couple different levels to that. You can annotate. If you can annotate on the screen, that's what you want.
Yeah.
And that's what having an iPad allows you to do. And so that kind of gets into more of the kind of next level, leveling up, so to speak. I think it's still a little clunky, like the Zoom app and the annotation there. You can share files during the middle of a conversation and all that, but it's still just not efficient. The workflow there, it's going to be taxing. So if you're using a computer, plug in your iPad, get the Fourscore app, and you know, both you and the student already have the music, the physical music. Okay, scan it in, and then now you use your, you have your Apple Pencil or a stylus, and now in real time you can actually point, you can magnify, you can show things in the music, and they will connect directly with that. It's so much easier to communicate that way.
Right. So this is definitely next level stuff here, but let's just go into it very quickly. You would then mirror the iPad onto the laptop screen. Is that how do you get the iPad, what's showing on the iPad, to your student's screen?
Yeah. So when you plug in the iPad through the Zoom app, it actually recognizes it as a device.
Oh, does it? Okay. You're teaching me something now. So what, in the video sections, it'll come up as a video?
Think of it as a camera.
Yeah. Okay. Like, yeah.
Okay. All right. So now it recognizes it as a device. And then when you switch to that, then all of a sudden whatever's on your screen is now on their screen.
Oh, that's cool. So how do it, hang on though, so I would need to connect my iPad via USB into my laptop for it to show up there?
That's right. Yeah, I think like...
Okay, I'm going to try this. I didn't know that you could do that.
Well, when you plug in and like for iTunes and all of that, normally that's the only reason we plug into our computer, but now it becomes a more interactive solution, so...
Wow. All right. I'm going to give that a shot. That is a very cool little tip. Thank you. But that is next level. For our teachers who are just beginning, they're likely to have a copy of whatever music the student is using, I would imagine, for most cases. So it would be, I guess, a matter of just changing again. It's about language use, isn't it? It's like, okay, well, instead of pointing at this bar, it's like, okay, well, so find bar 4, page 2, and that's where we're going to work for this little section, and be specific like that. Is that the right approach?
Yes, I would. Yeah, being very specific with it, and then maybe like playing through the passage before you do that, like making sure that okay, this is the section that we're focused on, and maybe having them point to it in their score as well. Just to, so taking the approach that pretend that's the first time that they're learning this section, regardless, so that way there's no confusion there in the communication of, because typically that's where you waste time. Like, where are we at? What are we working on?
Yeah, I can see that being a huge time waster. Yes. I can also imagine that demonstrating more than teaching, than talking, might be good in online lessons, perhaps. Like, you be very careful with your word use and then demo things.
Mark up the score. Form-wise, number the measures, do that first lesson. I mean, I do that with my students. We listen to the music beforehand, you know, different interpretations, you know, get your score, have them do the form analysis, whatever you use in your teaching method. And so that way, when you actually start working on it, you're more prepared and you're more focused in on that. So you're not having to go through, figure out what are we working on. I think if you're organized beforehand, and just in your overall teaching environment, it'll be a lot. You won't have those kind of problems as much.
And so now that you've gone full into online teaching, do you have a particular method that you use that is particularly suited to online? Or is that, for example, for beginners, Piano Safari? Or is there something else that you use?
I use the method that works best for the student.
Good response. Yes.
But, you know, as I'm classically trained and jazz trained, so like I believe wholeheartedly in the IEAR revolution, like you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But I do believe that there are certain methods that work for certain students. Piano Safari and Pathways to Artistry by Catherine Rowland. Those are kind of my two go-tos. But I've got jazz students that I have a completely different approach. I have technology, like I have students working on synths. So that's obviously it's a completely different thing there. So it's really fun for me to do all that. But I think that those two, in my opinion, work best for me in terms of combination. They work really well together. Piano Safari and Pathways to Artistry. But that's preference.
What is your, because you've gone all in with this, you have quite a tech setup now. Can you give us, just for those teachers who are maybe they're quite confident and looking to what the next level might be, what is your tech setup? How many cameras and angles and things do you have?
Sure. Well, let me just do what I call a tech stack, basically kind of building from the ground up. I use a really high-powered MacBook Pro, 16 gigabyte RAM, the latest processor. So just a really high-powered computer, you know, that we use for like gaming or for doing a lot of video production. That's kind of where you need to start with, because a lot of webcams, you're going to have trouble with conflicts and computer processing power and all of that. Yeah, I use up to 5 webcams, but typically just have 3 going. One profile, one over the top for my keyboard, one over the top for my piano. Sometimes I'll use my webcam for pedaling. I'll bring that out.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So I have a light that's attached to the bottom of my mic stand. I turn that on. And then I've got a great cam for pedaling. Working on WC, stuff like that, it really does help. Mm. And then I have another webcam that's on the other side, like a different profile shot. I typically don't use that unless I'm doing like intensive video stuff. So, but yeah, at all times, 3 cams operating. And then those 3 cams, what will happen is then I can manipulate those into different angles and zooming in, zooming out, basically kind of giving me what we call a scene.
Right.
Jumping the gun here, but there's broadcasting software. It's what, news producers use to do like live spots and all of that. And a lot of gospel musicians use it as well for their YouTube videos. But I use that so I can have basically create any kind of shot that I want with like virtual software like Classroom Maestro, like staff and chord notation, and then combine that with different camera angles, and then combine that with the actual, that's pretty much what that is. It's incorporating stuff that I have on the screen, capturing it with all my camera stuff, and then kind of try to be artistic with it. Mm. It's really fun and creative to put all that together. But, I incorporate the iPad a lot. I have studio condenser mics, and then that runs through an audio interface, more kind of a professional mixer. So I run everything through a mixer, and that's necessary to get the best sound. And also, you're not doing all that processing on your computer.
Mm.
I think I mentioned like the MIDI applications, but doing like all the virtual software, I have 2 external monitors. That's not even my computer. So I have all this screen space, and that's necessary because you can only have so much stuff on one screen.
Right. Yeah. I've learned that only just recently. I finally got a second screen and it's so good.
Yeah, to do the stuff I do, you have to have a lot of screen space. That's really the key. Like once I figured that out, I was like, it opened up everything in terms of the creativity, how I wanted to do everything. And then the headset. The headset is a must just because clear quality audio. I don't have to worry about my mic position. I can move around my setup. I can, do whatever. So,
and that's what you're recording this with now.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
What is it?
This is an Audio Technica.
Yep.
AT something something.
Yeah. It's Audio Technica. Good. What is the software, the broadcast software you use?
I use Wirecast. Wirecast is made by Telestream, same company that makes ScreenFlow. ScreenFlow software that I use quite frequently for all my videos. Yeah.
Can you use that live as well, or is that more for your recorded videos?
That's the intention. Like Wirecast is a live application. That's why they, the news producers,
Right.
Or churches, that's kind of that's the 2 big ones right there. That's their, their major clients and who they sell to mostly.
I guess the advantage of those organizations is that they have people sitting at the desk or the computer monitoring the different camera angles and mixing things together. Whereas you are a one-man band, you've got to do that yourself, right? Which would be quite hard to get your head around at the start. Well, Steve, it's been a great conversation, and I know this will have helped some people and hopefully answered some questions. Quick couple of final ones. Is there anything you've learned to do better now that you wish you had known earlier? There's probably lots of things, but could you narrow it down to a couple?
I would say talk less, play more. That's a big one. It's very easy to want to talk more because, they're on the other side of the world or whatever. They seem like they are, but they're right there. That's a big one. I would also say I was really prepared, to be honest, because I took my time to do it. I already had implemented a lot of like systems and stuff way before I did this to make it easier for me. So I think just changing how I communicated was the big one. That was the main one, because I'm actually
the language.
Yes, the language. Mm. I'm a better teacher because of it.
To finish off, yeah, it sounds like it's made you a better teacher and you realize that.
Yes.
Yeah, very much. That's a great way to finish. Well, that's brilliant. Steve, how can people find out more about you and have a look at some of your resources and videos?
Yes, right now I'm running a kind of almost like a tech support group and also a support group in general for music teachers, not just piano teachers. It's called the Virtual Music Room. And I'm currently producing as much content as I can to help with transition, bringing people in as a community to help each other. You know, let's do this thing together and make it on the other side. So feel free to come in, ask questions. I am there for you.
That's on Facebook, is it? What was it called again?
A Virtual Music Room.
Great. So it's a Facebook mm-hmm. group you can look up.
Correct. And then Virtual Piano Studio is my Facebook page for my teaching business. So you can see all the kind of inner workings of what I do. I post a lot of creative content there. So, you know, everything from performance to my daughter doing some creative stuff to me doing just kind of wild stuff, experimenting. So check that out. And then, you know, my YouTube and Instagram, I don't know if you're going to post that or.
Yeah, we can put the links on the page. Yeah.
Sure, sure. And then you can also contact me via email as well.
Fantastic. Well, Steve, that's such a great way to wrap things up. Thank you very much for your time today. Particularly, I know we're all busy and you've been driving around all over the place. So thank you. Wishing you all the best from over here in Australia. And hopefully we'll keep in touch.
All right. Take it easy, Tim.
I hope you enjoyed today's interview with Stephen. To get a bit of a glimpse of how you could potentially set up your studio in an ongoing capacity to offer online lessons, either completely online or certainly as part of your mix. And the discussions I've been having with our members and other teachers around the world, a lot of them are realizing that we can definitely continue this as part of the mix. And that can be a great way to slightly diversify our income because we're able to teach people from potentially other time zones and other locations, and certainly keep our students if they move away or if there are other issues that come up, like bad weather, hopefully not anymore, virus outbreaks. But it does give us that flexibility to be able to continue to teach regardless of those things that go on around us. Next week on the podcast, we have the fabulous Carly Walton, who's been coming to the aid of teachers worldwide with her online teaching Facebook group and a fantastic course. And the amazing thing is Carly, a little bit like Stephen, has been teaching for years online and traveling while she teaches. And she'd created this course last year well before any talk of coronavirus. So the timing is brilliant. And it was just lovely to be able to speak with her, because when we recorded this episode, she'd only just got back into the United States after cutting short her vacation to Thailand with her family, and she'd only just got back in too. It was really quite a stressful time for her. She'd been going nonstop, helping other teachers in the process, traveling, getting resettled back in the United States. So it was really fortuitous that we were able to chat with Carly, because you will absolutely fall in love with her if you haven't met her already. She's just a superstar, and you'll be blown away with her kindness, dedication, and commitment to supporting teachers everywhere. I'm Tim Topham, and you've been listening to The Topcast from topmusic.co. See you next time. For more information about this episode and to find out how to enhance your own teaching, visit topmusic.co. You'll find everything you need for your studio, from lesson plans to cheat sheets, quick win teaching ideas, and guides on how to build your teaching business. Plus, you'll be connected to a global community of the world's top music teachers. And when you're ready, join hundreds of other teachers around the world by becoming a Top Music Pro member and get access to all our bonus content and courses, including an extended cut of today's episode. And don't forget to follow topmusic.co on social media and subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen to it. That's all for today. We'll see you in the studio.